Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Nerdy gamer Corey Knockreiner.
In today's episode, we have some recent news involving a pretty major vulnerability in certain versions of Windows, and then four brand new vulnerabilities affecting Intel CPU chips. Pretty cool
stuff. Anything before 2011, or after 2011, I should say.
So today we have two fun news stories for you, and the first one comes from the world of Microsoft. If you're still using Windows 7 or Server 2008 or, God forbid, Windows XP or Server 2003, make sure you install the latest security updates that Microsoft released last week as soon as possible. They disclosed and patched a pretty serious RDP vulnerability in those versions of Windows, interestingly not Windows 8 or Windows 10. But long story short, they consider this vulnerability to be wormable, meaning it can spread without any user interaction, and it exploits a flaw in RDP that occurs before any authentication even occurs, which means if you have RDP open on your computer, the port, someone can go in there, exploit it, and basically get code execution on that computer.
By the way, I'm sure all our smart and technical users know this, but in case you don't, RDP is Remote Desktop Services, formerly known as Terminal Services. So this is the Windows service that allows you to remotely access a desktop and control it like you were there. Very commonly used. I mean, me and Mark, we both see lots of vulnerabilities targeting RDP even without exploit by brute forcing it. I think we talked about that last week or in one of the recent weeks. But like you say, this is a horrible pre-authentication flaw. I mean, it takes a single packet with no authentication if your service is open and you're using XP or Server 2003. So big deal.
Yeah.
The other thing I'll mention is the last time Microsoft, like both XP and Windows Server 2003 are not only end of life, but end of service. Mm-hmm. Technically, Microsoft doesn't have to release any more updates for them. And the last time they released an out of service update for Windows like this was when they were fixing Eternal Blue for WannaCry. In fact, they released it just a month before WannaCry came out, and I think we all remember how bad WannaCry was. So on the scale of severity of do you want to patch it or not, this is a for them to release this kind of out-of-service patch shows how big a deal the flaw is, and it could literally, you know, provide opportunity for the next ransomware and or worse.
Yeah, it's a pretty hardcore vulnerability. And it kind of goes with something we were predicting this year, where one of our security predictions we put out was the rise of vapor worms or fileless malware worms that can propagate without any user interaction. And this is the type of vulnerability that could very easily enable that for an attacker.
Yeah, the exploit code you might use with, or the shell code you'd use with this sort of remote code execution could easily just be spawning PowerShell. And now you have a wormable vulnerability that could spawn scripted PowerShell that, again, is a perfect example of fileless malware or the vapor worm.
Yep. And you already mentioned that, I mean, obviously patching is the best fix for this, but also just reviewing your policies and making sure that you don't have RDP access exposed to the internet. There are still, in my opinion, way too many companies that when they go to enable remote access for their employees, they'll just port forward RDP into whatever computer or server they're trying to access instead of using something more secure like a VPN. And even changing the port to a non-standard port is not enough. That's just security by obscurity. And anyone doing a slightly in-depth port scan or even just running Nmap on the internet will easily find that RDP server there. So instead of exposing it, VPNs are always the way to go for that, because A, it prevents people from automatically exploiting vulnerabilities in network exposed services like this, but B, it also provides more protection to that other threat you mentioned, brute force attacks that we see all the time against network exposed services like RDP.
Absolutely. By the way, while we're talking about this news story, I'm going to hijack it just to give a general patch update. The reason this patch came out was yesterday was Patch Tuesday. I haven't done a video for a while, but you might, if you watch our videos, you know that every second Tuesday of the month is Patch Tuesday. That's where Microsoft and Adobe also release all of their patches, security updates for the month. So besides this vulnerability, this is the highlight one, which we really want you to patch if you use old versions. Do know they release patches for tens and tens of vulnerabilities in all the Windows operating systems, as well as many other products like their browsers, SQL Server, Azure, Skype for Android. So overall, make sure to check out a Microsoft Patch Tuesday's blog post and get all of the updates, especially the critical ones first. And you might as well also check out Adobe, which had some updates. And I'll even point out the day before on Monday, Apple released a lot of security patches. So besides the RDP issue, it's a good opportunity to update all of your Microsoft and other patches as well.
So is Patch Tuesday always the second Tuesday of every month?
It is literally always the second Tuesday of every month. And both Adobe and Microsoft share it, so you will always get their releases. Apple tends to patch close to it, but they don't have a standard day. So it's either another day the week of or sometimes the week after.
So if you're already looking out almost every day for patches, it's definitely a good idea to at least revolve your patch schedule around Patch Tuesday so that you can test them and then deploy them as quickly as possible.
Yep. And my general advice, by the way, is nowadays for clients, you know, for normal desktops, the ones your users use, I actually fully support fully automatic updates, meaning download and install, only with a notice for telling people if they want to reboot now or later so that they don't reboot in the middle of work. But, you know, the only argument about not patching immediately is worrying about bugs and patches. But so far, there haven't been huge bugs that affect a desktop user. That said, to something you just said, Mark, for production servers, for patches that are to, say, terminal services or RDP, which you might have a production server that's pretty critical, that you do want to take a little time to test. Hopefully you have a virtual environment just for that purpose with copies of your servers that you can test before you push those ones. But still try to get it out within a few days if you can.
Great advice right there. So now for our second series of news stories. These are a bit of a continuation from something that happened, when was it? March 2018, I think, where you might have heard of a vulnerability in Intel CPUs called Meltdown. It was a pretty big deal at the time. It was one of the first...
Meltdown and Spectre at the same time, right?
Right.
Yeah.
One of the first major vulnerabilities discovered in CPUs that kind of broke isolation of different processes, to put it as simply as possible. It basically allowed different applications to leak data that other applications were using, which is a pretty big deal, especially in shared computing environments. So if you're in a virtual machine or up in the cloud land, where you're expecting your applications and systems to be safe from other people sharing those resources, a vulnerability like Meltdown last year kind of breaks that trust.
So to be specific, the reason it affects the virtualized environments like the cloud is not only is the virtual environment supposed to be isolated, but they probably shouldn't have direct physical access to they are supposed to be having a virtual processor only able to kind of see stuff from that. But with these vulnerabilities, I believe they can actually access the they get to leak information from the actual hardware processor. And to your point, that means a guest machine that should only be seeing its own virtual processor information can suddenly see information from the processor that literally controls all the guest operating systems. So that's kind of how it gets past its or outside its little context of its own virtual machine.
Exactly. And ever since Meltdown and Spectre, the floodgates have kind of opened on these types of vulnerabilities. It looks like researchers are paying a lot more attention to some of the efficiency tools that processors use in order to save computation time that we're now starting to realize come with losses in security, or at least opening up holes for potential attacks. Exactly.
To be specific, these process saving things, they generally call them speculative execution technology. And believe it or not, it sounds very similar to what it says, in that you may not know it, but when you have a multi-core processor, to save time, sometimes the computer guesses what its next operation is before it actually receives the new operation for a new core. And because of predictive technology, sometimes it's pretty good at guessing, based on what it's seen before, what its next operation will be. And that's how speculative execution saves time and increases performance of processors. You know, the idea being is they start a workload before it's actually received to save a little time. If it's wrong, they can drop it and start it when they get the real workload. But if they're right, they get a little performance. And all of these flaws, that's the Spectre and Meltdown, was based on this speculative execution. And these new flaws are also based on speculative execution.
Yep. So the reason we bring this up is because just this last week, four new pretty major vulnerabilities were discovered in this kind of speculative execution environment on Intel chips. Three of them have pretty marketable names. I think they even have logos. Those are Zombie Load, Riddle, and Fallout. And then a fourth, which is Store to Leak Forwarding, also follows along with that. And they each kind of exploit...
want to comment again, these marketing names, Psy. And without going down the gutter, Zombie Load just sounds gross to me.
They each... I agree with you entirely, by the way. But, you know, whatever helps get your paper published, I guess.
Yeah.
They each have their own little areas that they exploit, and their own different fallouts. I guess that's the name of one of them. Their own different ramifications from the vulnerabilities. Like Zombie Load, for example, could leak private browsing history from other applications running on that system. Riddle goes after information across security domains. So that's kind of similar to the cloud computing environment issue that we mentioned. Where if you're sharing a computing environment, you could potentially lose sensitive information to someone else sharing it with you. Fallout and Store to Leak Forwarding are actually really interesting, though, in that they break some very important protections that our processors actually use.
Yeah, basically, if you're doing a code execution vulnerability, any sort of memory corruption, in order to make it exploitable, you kind of have to figure out where your pointer is in memory, because you need to figure out, you know, you need to find out when it's going to be on the stack, when it's going to be to the point where it's ready to take the next instruction. And there's a lot of technologies like address layout randomization and just other memory position protections, things that kind of randomize memory to make it harder for like some guy exploiting a memory corruption flaw to figure out how to find the right place to put his shellcode so that it executes. And apparently, you know, Fallout and Store to Leak Forwarding are able to give an attacker who already has some sort of access to a computer, by the way, so we'll talk about that in a second, but it could give an attacker more information of memory positions, which might make it easier to exploit other types of vulnerabilities.
Exactly. The good news is for each of these, or at least Riddle and Fallout, I think Intel has provided microcode updates for their CPUs. Zombie Load has operating system patches available, I believe.
Yeah. And by the way, that's a key thing. You do need you're going to have to get an operating system update. But to really update this, you're going to have to go through your motherboard slash, you know, really your motherboard or system provider to get the microcode update that will, you know, fix some of the firmware.
Yep. And these are pretty serious vulnerabilities because of the damages they cause, but they, in order to actually exploit them, it's still very sophisticated attacks, or at least time-consuming attacks, to get really practical data, in my opinion at least.
Well, more importantly, and I think you kind of alluded to this, or even I did too, is in order to exploit this kind of, you have to run something locally. So you kind of already have to have local access. So you need to get malware on the computer, which by definition already gives you local access in order to trigger these vulnerabilities. I think some of them can be done through JavaScript too, if I remember right. Mm-hmm. But either way, it's kind of a local issue. So it's, you know, in many of the cases, if someone already has malware on your computer, there's other ways that he can easily access some of your information, including your private browsing history, et cetera. So they are serious issues on one hand, but the amount of access they already need, it's almost like, you know, the bad guy's already won the game if he's running code locally.
Exactly. With most of these vulnerabilities and the similar ones from last year, my opinion is that they're more of an issue for the likes of Amazon.com and Microsoft Azure than they are for you and me. Obviously, they're still big issues, but like you said, if someone already has malware running on your system, you're already off to a pretty rough day.
The issue with Azure is like, I don't need malware on a system. I can put my own workload in Azure's cloud, so I have what should be an isolated guest machine that can't access anything else, but I already have control of that guest machine, so I don't need malware. I just run this exploit code on my local machine, and suddenly it exposes other machines in that virtualization environment. So that's why you're saying it's worse there, because the attacker can just put a workload up there that, you know, in this case, it's not trying to install malware. It's just running something in its own workload to see other places.
Exactly. And so the interesting thing with these vulnerabilities is that the trade-off for patching them usually comes at a performance hit too. Like most of these exploit speculative execution, things that were designed and implemented to speed up processing power, basically, on the affected chips. And they have to patch them, which tends to slow it down or disable them entirely for some of the vulnerabilities, which means it becomes a bit more, I don't know, it seems like we're moving towards a point where some of our pretty rapid gains in processor speed and processing speed across CPUs are starting to come back and bite us, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe they can figure out a way to do this without the security ramifications. But it is kind of a hard thing. As a nerdy gamer, I also love my performance improvements too.
Exactly, which I wonder if we'll start seeing like server processors where they that are designed for cloud computing environments where they're technically a little less powerful than traditional processors we would see.
I believe some Xeon chips have already included some hardware level changes to fix these. Some of the modern Xeon ones, or however you pronounce the Xeon ones, mm-hmm. Post Spectre and Meltdown. So I do think that is happening. Changes to hardware to help with this. By the way, the other thing you will see is if you remember with Spectre and Meltdown, some of the initial patches that were kind of quick and dirty patches obviously did affect performance, but they also figured out ways to kind of mitigate and improve those patches so that they could, again, still mitigate these issues, but with less performance issues. So there's a chance that the patches will get better over time.
Exactly. And if you're a WatchGuard customer, you're probably wondering if we're affected. So we're still actually investigating whether these new specific vulnerabilities affect the physical Firebox appliances or not. But either way, they still require code execution on the system. And the way that our operating system is designed, if an attacker can somehow obtain code execution, you're already in a really rough spot. That's a major break in the system.
Yep. And by the way, getting code execution on our system is non-trivial in that, you know, we have true-rooted processes. We have a hardened OS that has no things like bash. You know, I talked about complex nerdy things on how to exploit a memory corruption. You have to know memory locations. And not only do we take advantage of a lot of the address randomization, but we're not just a standard Nix environment where the memory locations are well known for certain versions of OS. So it's pretty hard to run malicious code. If you could run malicious code on our Firebox, we would be very concerned with that before we were even concerned with these Intel flaws.
Exactly. And I thank you for not saying impossible.
No, nothing is impossible. The day I say unhackable in context of anything, Mark, you're welcome to put me out to pasture and take over.
I'll give you a big slap across the face. Shame on you. So
we'll not follow the Oracle's footsteps.
Oh, God, yes. Moral of the story today, patch your stuff, I guess.
Yeah. That goes for everything from your socks to your jackets and clothes to your software.
Exactly. Great advice, Corey.
I guess unless you're one of the millennials wearing jeans. I remember back in the 80s when holes were a thing. Now they've come back again.
Fashion advice from Corey Knockreiner.
You're welcome for your daily dose of randomness.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_, and Corey is at @SecAdept, and the both of us are at #The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening. We are actually off next week due to a very busy travel schedule, but we will see you the week after.
Bye, guys.